everyone in the tech field wants to do three things: relax, automate, and get paid. There's no other tool out there that can make that more possible than D7. Go over to foolishit.com. Don't forget to use the promo code PodNutsShow20 to save an extra 20%. PodNuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 86 for the Geeksters. We are joined with Mitch and Tim here tonight. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Mitch has already asked us to pre-think of a great question that he has. And I think it's going to be a question that we won't be able to answer on the show. There may be some fists flying. There may be some, I may pick up a chair and start throwing at her, Geraldo style. Geraldo. Anyways. But we'll start. All the way to my right, we have Tim Bauermeister. Hey, Tim, how's it going today?
Good, baby. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing real good. Right. And then after that, we have Mitch Heyman. Mitch is joining us.
I'm off on vacation this week.
I know. That's why you're spending so much time in the Linux.
Yeah, just reading a bunch of tutorials. It's a bit confusing, but I think I'll get it.
Yeah. Yeah, you will. And I'm Martin Obando, of course. Nice to see everybody today. I'm glad that everybody's here joining us. We do have kind of a little bit of a following on our live show, which is really nice. I see names in there that I see kind of on a weekly basis. So I really like that. But so, Tim, what's been going on? We haven't talked in a week.
Not a whole lot to report this week. I actually was a bit under the weather, so fortunately it was a fairly slow week. I didn't have a whole lot crazy going on. Today is probably the first day I've been feeling human again, so glad to be here. As far as work coming in out of the shop, it's just been kind of routine virus removal and put a laptop screen in for somebody a couple days ago, and it's been about it. So a lot of work threatening to come in, people threatening to bring work in, but then they don't show up, or I don't hear about it again. So it's like a lot of threatening work. But,
Your idle threats don't scare me.
Yeah, that's it. I just shake my fist at the text and say, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. So a lot of and that just reminded me of this one guy. I apparently blocked it out, but I got this one guy that every time he calls me, it's like I'm getting to where I don't think I'm going to even answer his calls anymore because. He calls and he reports his problem, but it never really transpires into him bringing it in. And it's where he's like wants a lot of free advice. And the guy's pretty clever. I don't know why he doesn't like fix stuff more without calling me. Or I don't know why he calls me at all because he just doesn't. So that's very irritating. You will have people calling you like that. You don't know until after it's happened a few times, of course. But I finally kind of figured this guy out. He's one of these people that, you wouldn't call your doctor and just pick his brain, asking about symptoms, this and that. You wouldn't call your lawyer, or if you were at a dinner party or something, you wouldn't just harass some other professional for 20 minutes about things. People don't have any problem doing that to mechanics or computer techs. So you have to kind of realize where the line is. Where do you draw the line between just polite conversation and somebody who is getting a lot of free diagnostic work from you? Not only is it irritating, not only will you come to despise this person. But it's just bad because it could turn out bad for you because, any kind of free advice, they run with that and they'll hang parts or they'll do stuff. And if something goes wrong, it'll come back to you and you'll think, well, how can that be? Because, this was just idle conversation. I didn't make any money off this. How can any of this be my fault? But it will be. So, when I get some calls, or have some conversation with folks, if we can't cover it in a couple minutes, then, I just have to say, hey, why don't you bring it in? I'll take a look at it. So, and some people, they will continue. And this guy's one of them. He'll just keep, he'll say, makes me crazy. He says, all right, well, I'm going to try this. I'll call you back. And he hangs up. And I'm like, no, don't do that. I'm getting to the point where I just can't even answer his calls anymore. I'm going to have to limit him to texting or something. So, anyway, he's a fun one. Like I said, I wasn't feeling well, and I really wasn't in the mood for that. But when you deal with the public, you're going to deal with all kind of people. So that's I forgot about that one. So that was one of my interesting misadventures of the week.
Like in the movies where they know that the FBI is listening in and they can trace your call in 5 minutes. So they make the host, you know, the guy makes the, you know, the kidnapper makes his call 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Because he knows
he has like there's an eternal clock that's ticking down.
After this, Tim's going to start to charge me.
And, yeah, that's right. You see a clock. You look over my shoulder. You see a clock, and just before the, you know, it's just about to hit 12. You know, he just slams the phone down.
I'll call you back. I'm gonna try it. And then, but then next time, what does he do? He calls you, and at 4 minutes and 45 seconds, he hangs up again. So we know that after so many minutes, you will start to get charged. He's just right on that edge.
Oh man, yeah. It's so anyway. I go too easy on people, and I let them carry on, and I'm getting better at it. But that's, I guess, that's one word of caution, that those people do exist. They're decent people. I mean, they're not like the crazy people that really make your life miserable. But they sponge off information, and I'm sure they do it to professionals. I'm sure that there's a long list of professionals in the area that will not answer calls from this guy. So.
So if you were to do it this way on your own personal computer, what would you recommend?
I would bring it to me. So
yeah,
he's a pilot. Which I mean, those people are the worst.
Oh man, pilots! Good grief, eating up there, eating their own peanuts. Everybody else has been in the back starving, wishing they had just a small, tiny bag of peanuts.
They've got five. They're just like dumping peanuts on the floor, like and laughing maniacally, like because we can.
They're throwing in the air and just letting it bathe them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The little peanut shells going into the instrument panel and everything. They don't care.
No,
like,
they don't
they're
care.
Like machines. There's computers fly this thing anyway. They're just up there to.
That's right. Well, I had a client one time. This is kind of funny that you mentioned that, because I had a client. I went to their place of work. They had all of these questions about, you know, what about this router and what would you do with this network? Because they were actually wanting a network setup. So they were going to be involving some switches and some routers. We talked about it. This is what we could do. This is, you know, we'll write a proposal. And after it all was said and done and we wrote the proposal and we kind of laid out what we would do, they said, thank you. And we never heard from them. Go back years later, right? They hired me at my business because they didn't have anybody to do it, and they implemented my work.
Nice.
So they just did the same thing. But what they didn't know is that they would be hiring me later on. So,
yeah, well, you know what you do is you do what my grandma does. Anybody asks, or I think everybody's grandma does this, when anybody asks for like their famous blue ribbon winning recipe to something, absolutely. I mean, she's probably giving out like, stacks. She's probably given out more cards that recipe on it than Las Vegas has dealt playing cards. But it's always missing one ingredient, so nobody can really truly replicate it. So that's what you do, Mark. Just leave out like the missing component to your setup there, and then they'll call you back for sure,
right? Or just substitute sugar with salt.
Exactly.
Except I don't know how you do that in. You'd want to you don't want to get rid of salt, because we need salt for passwords, you know, salted hashes. So add sugar. I don't know.
Add sugar. Oh yeah, careful with the sugar though. That might take you somewhere nasty on the internet.
Okay. Just leave something out.
Matter of fact, nasty sugar is the name I used to dance under.
Hey, so Mitch, I'm moving.
I'm glad that's getting recorded.
Wow. Well, everybody hear it first. Please, nobody Google that.
Oh, man. I wish you'd see anybody on the audio. If you hadn't been seen Martin's face, it was priceless.
Oh, I just Googled sugar. Oh, no.
No. Nasty sugar.
Nasty sugar.
All right.
I haven't Googled that, but I don't think I would.
No. No, 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 no. So, Mitch, I hear you clicking and clacking away over there. What's going on?
I'm sorry.
No, no, no. It's good.
More work,
I'm just more
work
curious.
For Dwarf. More work for Dwarf. No, just talking to some people in chat.
Well, yeah. I know you are. You had a week off, or you're in the middle midweek.
Yes.
Of getting your week off, and you since last week we're talking a lot about Linux. Are you still on the Linux?
Yeah. After going to OLF, the Ohio Linux Fest, I feel obligated. No, that's not true.
Because that's what Linux is. It's actually like it's your grandmother hovering over you. You know, man, sure wish somebody would do the dishes. That's kind of what Linux is.
My grandmother's been going in for 40 years, so 30, 40 years. But anyway, I've messed with Linux on and off over the years, over the last 10 years. I haven't messed with it too much in the last few years. So I figure I'm going to literally dive right into it and mess around with Arch Linux.
Did you say dive or die?
I might die afterwards if I don't succeed. But, yeah, I've messed around with Slackware before. But everything I've learned, you know, if you don't stick with it, you're going to forget. And I have forgot pretty much everything. So, but, you know, I'm reading a lot of tutorials, looking at a lot of videos. But, you know, some of it's confusing because I don't have an EIFU, the newer BIOS. Well, actually, I do on this machine. But I'm going to put it on an older Core 2 quad. And I just want to try to mess with it. I mean, good thing about Arch, you set up the way you want it with the packages you want, nothing else. And that's the beauty of it. And supposedly it's stable. I mean, you haven't messed with it, have you?
No. Darn. No, I haven't at all.
So, you know, it's just, and just doing the command line stuff, you're going to learn. You're going to learn a lot of stuff. And to me, that was the best way for me to learn and remember, you know, the file structure. And so that's why I want to dive right back into it. Because Slackware, it seemed like I did have success on that about whenever Slackware 10 came out. And that was 5-8 years ago. I don't know. But I worked on that a lot, and I finally got that working. It took a while. But I just want to mess with it. And see how long I can just keep one box with that on there. So see what happens.
What are you going to do with that machine, Mitch?
I'm going to do with that machine. That machine is right here. As I showed, it's going to be on that black box there. It's a Core 2 quad. Just to have Linux on it. Actually, I have on the other machine to it, to the left, the Enforce 2 AMD old computer. I have Puppy on there. And that is not a straightforward install. I don't know if anybody... You know, a lot of these distros, Ubuntu, Linux Mint, you can just put in there and install it. You have to pre-do your hard drive, format your hard drive ahead of time for this. I mean, you do it during the install, but you have to follow a guide to do that. And Puppy Linux, it's a little strange, but it will run on a really slow machine. And it's running on there, too. But I just want to try to mess around with... Because the community is so big on Arch Linux, I was reading through it today. I mean, a lot of the different postings in the forums. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing good about Linux. You can really get some help. And of course, here we go, and that will segue later on to open source.
Yeah, that's gonna be a topic. So I'm looking forward to that. So, I have not been doing a whole... Well, that's not true. I actually have been doing a whole lot. I had an email migration last week that caused me to pull an all-nighter. And it's one of those things where at 5 a.m., you're done. It's done. It's not working. Nothing's working right. And you end up just rolling back your whole process. And so that was really frustrating, and I can go deeper into that if you guys would be interested in hearing kind of what happened and what I found was working and what was not working. I don't want to bore anybody, but
is there a happy ending to that story?
There is a happy ending to the story. There definitely is a happy ending to the story. It was a different ending than I expected, but it worked all the same. So, So we have a company, and the company has two domain names. We'll just start with abc.com and 123.com. So you may want to get a piece of paper if you guys are going to want to follow along here. So abc.com is the primary, and 123.com is their other email address that they want to. They're going to keep the domain name, but they don't want to email there anymore. They want to centrally bring everybody into the abc.com. So the plan was make everybody an email address on abc.com. And before I go any further into this, there's only three people on 123.com. Everybody else in the whole company is on abc.com. So it's an older domain. So we gave email addresses to those three people on abc.com. And everything was working. Internally, they could access their email. So they started using that email for corresponding with. But they were still getting email at 123.com. We knew it was going to go away. But in the meantime, they were responding to all their clients and all their customers. Hey, use this email instead. But still getting email on the other one. Except for one gentleman. We just hadn't got everything squared away. He's an older gentleman, needing to sit down with him and train him because he's actually going from a web interface to a hosted Exchange web interface. And since they're so different, I wanted to sit down with him. And it was costing them over $130 a month for this one email account, essentially because it was the last holdout for all of these email accounts. Which was just astonishing when they showed me the bill and it was $140+ for a pop email. It's like, oh my gosh. So the plan was not a problem. What we'll do is one night we'll change the MX records. We'll point it at my server because I already host their website. We'll just host it at mine and I'll just do a blind forward. So you email 123.com, it blinds forward to abc.com. Ta-da, everything's fine. So that's what I started to do last Thursday night. Starting about 10 o'clock, I went ahead and I made sure that I had all the emails set up correctly. I made sure I had all the forwards set up correctly. And then I made the MX record change. And I waited for, you got to wait a little bit of time for it to happen.
Sure.
So I waited. I was working on some other projects. And the MX record change was successful. So I started testing it. And I would email at 123.com. And what would happen is I would get a bounce back. The abc.com said no user available, no user found. That was weird. So I would email directly to abc.com and it would land in the email box. But I could not get it to forward. So I would email then directly from 123.com. Instead of actually using a forward, I would email directly from 123.com to self, user self at abc.com. It would bounce, user not found. So I opened up a ticket with my hosting provider, thinking it was something on my side, because I was the intermediary, right? It had to go through me out. And we searched and searched. I mean, we searched for hours to do this. I did, there's a great site out there called MX Toolbox, MXTOOLBOX.com, that you can do DNS lookups, you can do mail record lookups. That's a great site to be able to look and see if stuff has not, mail record has mail record changes have propagated. There's another great site out there to look up, and it's called it's the Global DNS Propagator. And with that website, and I'll put all these in my in the show notes, but that one's actually at whatsmydns.net. You can actually put in your IP address and you can see if it's propagated and where throughout the world. So two sites that I want to bring up. So we looked and looked and looked and couldn't figure it out. And I don't know. We never could figure it out. So come 5 o'clock, and we had hammered this thing. Because remember, when you make any kind of a DNS record, you have to wait a bit, And generally, sometimes it could take, up to 24 to 48 hours. So we thought, well, maybe it's broken. Maybe there's something else going on. So we would change it, wait an hour. And, when you make, waiting, changing and making and waiting, changing and then waiting turns out to be, make for a long night. It makes for a long night. So what was happening then is it was just not working and I couldn't figure it out. And I was reaching the point of no return where I had to go ahead and roll it back because people were going to start emailing this gentleman because he had not told his other clients that he was getting an email change because I wanted to do it just seamlessly. It was my whole goal with all this is just make it seamlessly for this gentleman. That way he doesn't have to worry about trying to tell his clients or his people, just it was done. 5 o'clock rolled around. I rolled it back. I said, forget it. We ended up rolling it back. And I was so, so frustrated because come Friday, what was happening was, and actually I'm just now getting a phone call from that gentleman. Sorry about that. Okay. Yeah. And he's probably wondering what's going on. And we'll have to call him back.
Tell him he's listening to the show.
I know, exactly. I should just text him, hey, tune on in, because I'm getting to the point where it's good here. So come Friday, what is it, Tuesday? Yeah, so come Friday, I didn't hear anything. Nothing was going on. No, I'm sorry. Maybe this was Friday. I can't remember. It was a long, long night. So come Friday, didn't hear much about anything. Starting yesterday, my initial plan was, I got talking with my hosted exchange company, and what they said is that with, because we're using Microsoft Hosted Exchange, what they said, what you can do is you can actually take the 123.com, add it to the abc.com account, and then you just create aliases for those users. And I thought, I didn't know you could do that. So, and that's perfectly free within their hosting plan. So I did that. And was kind of just waiting, created the, you know, I didn't change the mail records on the registrar. I just added a couple little text files that they wanted me to add. But what was happening was that because of all of the changes we had done and then taken out and then redid and then, you know, kind of messed with over the Friday night, Thursday night. It must have been Friday night because I remember I did it over the weekend or something. People email was starting to bounce. And so yesterday afternoon I said, okay, don't email this gentleman. I will fix it tonight. So instead of waiting till this weekend to do it, I just did it last night. I said, okay, here we go. 10 o'clock last night, I did this, and all I did was change the mail record to match the mail record for on 123.com to match the mail record for abc.com because we're just routing all of that data right to the new hosted exchange. Waited like a couple minutes for DNS to propagate. Thought, all right, here we go. It propagated. And I sent an email, and it worked. So sent an email to 123.com, and it worked. Sent an email to abc.com, and it worked. I was like, yay!
That's a good moment.
So I emailed the lady, my contact at the company. I said, hey, I got it working. After last night or the other night, I totally needed a win. And as of today, it's working. The problem is that we changed his password on the old account, so he doesn't. Because the old account's still active, so he can log in. Right. He will see that he hasn't received any email and go, okay, but then respond and he can send out. But then when people respond back to him, it's going to go to the new account. Right. So we changed his password and we thought, I don't know how to get a hold of him because he's, you know, off at a ranch and that it was him calling. So he's probably like, hey, I'd like to check my email, but I can't. And probably called the company and they said, call Martin. So I will give him a call today. But so hosted email through Exchange through Office 365, you know, they've kind of made that their big swooping statement, but works well, especially, and you can have multiple domains and then create aliases with it. It's not really a subdomain, but you can have two domains on one account. So I was pleased with that, and it worked flawlessly. And it took about 15 minutes, so I actually got a full night of sleep. I was going to take a nap yesterday. I thought, you know, I better take a nap because I could be up all night again. Yeah, it was done 10 minutes. I could have done it over there's a break in a TV show.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. I mean, anything you have troubleshoot, you have to sit and wait. That's the worst. So for it to come back 10 minutes later and it's working, that's nice. Like you said, it was a win.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you're messing with people's email, especially in a business critical stuff, because this gentleman gets probably 100 emails a day. It's not just he gets a couple emails. And he's the owner of a very large property management company and a very large, for apartment complexes, but then also in the Bay Area, a very large, the original company, which handles, you know, huge office spaces and huge, you know, houses in the the Bay Area. So, Southern Bay Area, and yeah, big win for me. So
cool, very nice.
So I had that going on, and then I got a call from a client who I've worked with before. Great, great gentleman, really, really nice. And he says, My computer tells me I've been surfing child porn and it wants $300. And I thought, ah, yes, the ransomware. So I went ahead and I got talking to our good friend Liam over at Liam Tech, because I know that I had ran Hitman Pro on this computer before, the free version. And this was during our conversation. This is probably during, remember we had this conversation probably 5-6 episodes ago. And I think it was the same gentleman, actually. So I asked him, what did you do? And he goes, well, I got an email from my relative, and it didn't look right, but it had a link in it, so I clicked it.
Why couldn't you do that?
Right. And he said, nothing happened, and then I rebooted the machine. So we had to talk about not clicking things that aren't good, I know it's from your relatives, but don't click it if it doesn't, So I fixed it. Hitman Pro, I ran it again, but it didn't do anything. And after it was fixed and redeployed, talking back with Liam again, the one thing I forgot about Hitman Pro is that sometimes when it looks like it's not doing anything, it is, and just let it be. I've definitely seen it where it boots to Hitman Pro. You tell it number one, right, to go bypass the master boot record, and then the computer reboots and it goes right back to the little FBI screen or whatever, the Interpol screen, and then Hitman Pro kicks in. This time I waited about 3 minutes and nothing happened, but I do remember in the past that even when using Hitman Pro, once it does that reboot and it gets back into Windows and it looks like you're right back to your original desktop, just walk away, because sometimes it will take longer than you expect for Hitman Pro to actually initialize, get rid of that, and then start its thing.
Interesting.
So it made me question whether or not Hitman Pro was working, because due to the 30-day stuff. But from talking to Liam some more, he says even if it says that you're bypassed that 30 days and you can't use it anymore, it still initializes and tells you where everything is. It just won't clean it for you. So I didn't let it get to that, which probably means that I was too anxious I was not waiting long enough. So patience. I did end up using, I used Kaspersky, and that was able to get rid of everything. But this man had a whole bunch of stuff. It was nasty. Just rootkit after rootkit after rootkit. He's all cleaned up now. We did purchase him the pro version of Malwarebytes. I'm not sure if that's going to help, but at least it's better than nothing. And he's in the process of looking for a new computer anyways, but that's besides the point.
And when you say Kaspersky, you mean the Kaspersky Rescue Disk?
Yes, the Rescue Disk, where you boot from the disk and you update it and then scan from there.
You can just go ahead. There's a command utility in there in Kaspersky where you can run that and type in Windows Unlocker, and that will do it even without updating it. I mean, you can, depending on how old the disk is, when it was last downloaded and updated, because I had that issue too before, and that's, you can do that even before updating it, and because that worked for me when all same issue, because I had Hitman Pro was past. I used it on this PC several times in over a year, and but it did give me the. It wouldn't clean it, but it does, like Liam said, it'll give you the path. It'll give you the whole path where everything is. And I was able to clean stuff out of there. But the hard drive went up anyway, so. But that just that Windows Unlocker, if you type it in, Google it, Kaspersky Windows Unlocker, it'll give you, the actual command. It's only a couple commands, from the terminal. And that will do it in most cases too, depending how, I guess if it's something new, you want to download the updated thing or update it, or you could let the thing run. But Kaspersky, to me, it's when it does its update thing, it's a little slow.
Oh, it takes forever.
Yeah.
Well, I did find that I have updated it both with the GUI interface and with the command line interface, because when it boots up, it asks you those two options whether or not you want to do. The command line does work a little bit better, but I do know that in the command line interface, once you finally download everything and then you run it, it has a tendency to wait for responses. So, you know, it's not one of those things you can just sometimes let run overnight, because that's a great thing. You can just say, clean it and go to bed. And when you get up in the morning, it's done. I've done that, gone to bed, and then it's sat at like 16% waiting for me to say, yes, go ahead and clean this. So where the GUI interface seems to know that you want to clean it more than the text one, but the text one does update faster than the GUI. So the one thing I did notice and I did find, which I found it a little odd, was that if you download the, you know, so if you go download, well, I, okay, 3 months ago, I downloaded Kaspersky. I ran that. That's the definitions are for that date. If I go and I download it again today, I have new updates already built into Kaspersky. It doesn't, they add definitions when you, either when you download it or they're, I mean, they update their, that ISO file frequently. So, which means that if you are burning it to a disk, you might as well just throw away the disk every time, because you might as well get a new one, because then you, at least you don't have to wait as long to update. I mean, I had to wait a couple hours because it had been 2 months where I probably should have just gone and updated it, you know, gone and just downloaded the ISO.
And you can always try to fight to get into, if you can get into safe mode or get it to boot up and maybe get, you know, What's that one kill where it kills the processes? I forgot what it's called.
Is that active kill?
There's a couple different ones. And then maybe you can run a Windows utility to do it. Because Kaspersky has a Windows utility too. I forgot what it's called. But that's worked for me before in the past too. But I was able to get into Windows.
Yeah. So he's all cleaned and ready to go. Oh man, what else happened? I've been busy.
R kill, sorry.
Oh, R-Kill, yeah. Oh, I'm moving over here typing notes for the... I had a gentleman call me up. He had lost a whole bunch of pictures he needed. So he's in California, so he overnighted me a hard drive, and I tried Recuva. Recuva didn't do anything. What initially set this off was he said, I think they're on this hard disk. So he plugs it in, I remote to his computer, and the hard disk doesn't show up. So you go into you go into disk manager, and there's no hard drive. There's no number assigned or letter assigned to it. Go to assign it a letter, and it says, would you like to format this drive? It's like, oh, no. Okay, so let's seize the partition, 1 gig and a 300 gig partition. All right, so let's 100 gig and a 400 gig partition. So let's go ahead and create these. Disks aren't even active. Okay, switch to dynamic. Would you like to do that? Yes. Nope, can't do that. So I couldn't do anything with these disks. I said, well, I can't do much with them down there, so if you can overnight it to me. So he overnighted it to me. It was a Western Digital My Passport. So it's got a full-sized hard drive in it, but it's one of the ones that just has a USB and a power to it, external drive. Plugged it into my Windows box because I was able to, I don't know if you guys knew this, but PhotoRec, which is a great Linux utility for recovering data, they have a Windows version.
Correct.
And I forget about it every time I need to recover something, because I have in the past, I've paid for all of these other applications, and then I always end up going back to PhotoRec, which is a free version. So PhotoRec for data recovery is great. It will take a while, but I love the fact that you can just say, you know, oh, I know that I'm specifically looking for documents or JPEGs or bitmap, or you can just say, give it to me all. And I sent him back down with a whole bunch of data, none of it he needed, but I think he's overwritten it before. So now we're back to, he thinks the data's on another hard drive. So he's now sending me back the Western Digital, of which I formatted and then put all of his data that I was able to recover from the disk. It's because I recovered it to my local machine, formatted his Western Digital external drive, put all the data back on it, sent it back to him. He then says, no, I don't want, this is not something I need. But maybe it's on this hard drive. So he's just pulled the hard drive, just the hard drive out of a computer, sending me that and the Western Digital drive back up to me. I'll probably get that tomorrow. And then I'm going to recover data from the hard drive, put it in whatever I can recover, put it back on the Western Digital and send both of them back down to him so then he can see if that's what he needs.
So, wow.
His words were, quote unquote, I'd rather be caught having an affair than lose any of this data my wife needs. So... and I've met his family, and I know his wife very, very well. They're a great, sweet family, but I thought, wow, that's saying So apparently the data that he cannot find is very, very, very important.
Because, in the end, that fare may have been cheaper.
Yeah, because I guess in the past he called me and he says, do you know how to get any of this data? And I looked and I couldn't find it. He says, I've lost my wife's dad's, you know, last kind of days videos. And, man, he was in some serious hot water. Now he's lost more data. And he's like, I don't want to say anything to her. Please don't tell on me. And I'm like, we'll do the best we can to get to recover data. Because he says, I can't. The data's not here. Look. And he shows me all these datas. And every single folder, every single picture has an arrow on it. And I said, uh-huh. And I said, those are shortcuts. And he says, but I could open them at one time. Well, yeah, I think because, you know, you plugged it in, you created shortcuts, you left it still plugged in, you opened up the shortcut, and there was the data. And then you removed the data. So, well, I'll keep you up to date on what takes come out of that. But it was like, oh. So I've got some data recovery coming up.
But so congratulations. You still have thumbnails anyway, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But we're going to.
I only lost the big ones, honey.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, well, it's not even thumbnails, it's just shortcuts.
Oh, we used to all the pictures had arrows on them.
Yeah, because they're shortcuts.
Right, he has thumbnails.
Well, I don't, I
was picturing actual, like, little versions of the images, like thumbnails, not like list version or detail.
Well, no, it wasn't. It was just shortcuts, too. It was the generic Windows image, you know.
Okay, all right. It's just okay. It was like the same
JPG
icon over and over. Okay.
Right. Yeah, with arrows, and I was like, he
actually had the thumbnails there. Okay.
No, he had nothing, but a whole bunch of shortcuts, a whole bunch of 1K shortcuts.
Okay. Saying you can't get there from here.
Exactly. So he says, I think it's in this computer, but this computer doesn't boot anymore. So we'll get it. We'll get it squared away.
So he didn't even know where they were to lose.
No, he's just sending me stuff. And unfortunately, he's 6.5 hours driving one way there.
Yeah.
Luckily, UPS has gotten better and he can overnight stuff to me, which usually takes one day. But it used to be when I would overnight stuff to him, you would never get it before 3 days. Because it would go from like here to San Francisco and then catch like a feral dog. And then come up, and then I think it gets transferred. Once it hits the redwoods, I think it gets transferred to a possum, and then it may make it to the place in one piece.
Which are nocturnal.
As long as it doesn't get double booked.
Yeah. I hate when I get double booked on a nocturnal animal.
It's good advice.
It is good advice. Never get double booked on a feral animal. Yeah. So, and then today was, I've been doing a hunting down a lot of, some of the clients that I work for. We want to make sure that they're being protected as far as the residents go, their apartment complexes. So we've been implementing open DNS, and I've been, you know, just kind of going from site to site to make sure that the residents' computers are working and are being protected as good as possible, because there still needs to be some self, monitoring. But we're doing the best we can with that. And it's free, so that works out well. That's been my week.
Recovery. I mean, that's something I've always kind of enjoyed, the data recovery. Usually when it goes well. I've always been surprised by how much success I've had with just off-the-shelf tools that I've, like, free Linux tools. That, you know, you mentioned PhotoRec. That's been huge. And Test Disk, right, is the other one, that it's apathetic to whatever format the drive was. It just pulls off stuff that looks like a file. And then, like, it's up to you later to kind of sort through it. That's the hard part, but, I mean, those have been huge. It just kind of just runs through it and just pulls all kinds of stuff on. These free tools. They're not the easiest things in the world to use, but, I mean, if you learn to use them, you can have just monster success getting data off drives that you would think were just. I've had drives that were, like, formatted and, excuse me, Windows reloaded on them. Well, you know, I mean, as long as the stuff was saved further on down the drive, geez, you're still pulling the stuff off. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had back when floppies were all the rage. I had some people come up to me and said, "Hey, we lost data on this floppy disk. What can you do?" And you know what was it? 1.44 megabytes, and yeah. I pulled 4 megs of data off of it.
Wow, just because, that's really good.
Well, just because, I mean, it was just layers of data, right, yeah. on the same disk. So I didn't find what they were looking for, and they were pretty upset. But that's not the point. I was impressed with how much data I was able to pull off of it. They didn't care.
That's like a magic trick.
I know. It's like, watch me watch me pull this megabyte out of my floppy disk.
Watch me pull your data off of this disk.
Voila.
Nope. Again, not what I wanted. Yeah, nope. But you know what? With only 4 megs, you could figure it out a lot faster that you didn't have what you wanted.
That's right.
Not like 500 gigs.
That's right. Great. I got my data back. It's taken me a year to go through it, and I still don't have what I want.
It's been a year. I forgot what I was looking for.
Exactly. But I don't know what else is going to happen this week. It's.
Can I offer a really quick word of warning? when you're running like PhotoRec or any of those that, or even Recava, that it's just pulling off stuff that the software itself cannot. It doesn't decide whether this is stuff that was lost or stuff that was deleted on purpose. So, I don't know. Take like some Rohypnol or something when you're sorting through people's data, because you have no idea what you're about to see. Some of it you'll wish you could just bleach your imagination after seeing it. So, I'll leave it at that. But, yeah, it's going to pull off stuff that was deleted accidentally and stuff that was deleted intentionally. So,
right. Well, there, you
maybe
know,
stuff that was just saved for a while and then moved to like a different location. I suggest a roofie and a glass of scotch.
Next time you get in that situation, Tim, can you give me a call so I can see? No, just kidding. Just kidding.
Bitch.
Been in that position.
I was just about ready to say, but that is what makes a responsible tech versus tech off the street. If people really trust you to back up their, to recover data off of their hard drive when they may or may not know or have forgotten that maybe there is some stuff on there that could be compromising, that's where, it'd be the same way when clients give you a computer and they say, "I need you to transfer all my data over," or "I need you to find something for me." Anytime your client gives you their computer with all their data on it, they're expecting you to have a level of professionalism and stuff. And while I understand you were joking and that's funny, there it does have to be said that, as technicians, we have to have there is a standard of,
ethics.
Of goodness that of ethics that we need to, we're responsible for.
Obviously. Yeah. It's your role to fix the computer, give it back. Don't go digging through their pictures and that. However, when you're this data recovery and that photo rec, you just have folders with ridiculous,
amounts of hex
names, and it just has like just clumps of stuff, and you have to kind of sort out what is junk and what's not. And I use a pretty big, colander. I let them kind of just take care of the rest, but every once in a while you do kind of like back into something you wish you hadn't seen, and now it's like, great. How am I supposed to give this back to you? It's like you bite your cheeks trying not to like grin, laugh in this person's face because of what you've seen.
Right.
So, I think that's what Martin's saying, like when about the level of professionalism, like don't laugh in somebody's face when you get their data back, if at all possible.
But if at all possible. there are definitely exceptions to the rule.
Now, you're absolutely right. It happened to me once. I kind of joked.
My laughter. I told you not to say that stuff on your computer.
A computer that I cleaned up. It had some stuff. You probably going to the wrong sites, and I was kind of teasing him about it. He really got offended. He really chewed me out, and I was wrong. I was definitely wrong. I shouldn't have said anything.
What'd you say?
I was just joking about him, because I work with the guy, and even though I don't do it full time, but
that makes for an awkward Monday, doesn't it?
Actually, a couple times I said something.
Well, there's your problem.
Yeah, yeah.
joke once, you're like, I know, exactly. Hey, it's Wednesday. Can I mention this again? I'm sorry, Mitch.
Hey, you don't need to discuss to anybody else what was found on my computer.
Oh, yeah. Man. So you shouldn't bring him a cake, like with something similar iced onto the top of it, of where he was. An icing representation of the inappropriate thing that was stored on his computer.
Basically, what's found on the computer is between the owner and the technician, and you don't have to take. Now there's some things like there are certain laws where you're supposed to report certain things, Martin. If you do see certain things.
I mean, he didn't ask me.
Martin. I'm sorry, both of you.
No. Yes. I would assume so, but I don't know, because really I don't go digging that deep. When I do photo rec, I will it saves it to my local machine because I'm pulling it from an external hard drive. I sort by type, and I have folders in another section of the local machine for like documents, pictures, videos, you know, whatever. And I sort by type. Oop, pictures. Highlight them all. Drag them over. Text documents,
exactly,
highlight them all,
I don't even
look at them. I just dump them all in there. I give them back to the client, and I separate.
Let them after that. Let them decide what they want to keep.
Right, and I mean, I've separated it for them. I don't just give them just a big giant dump of raw data. I at least separate it so they can go, oh, I'm looking for the photo, but I'll give them everything, and that's not my job they're not asking me to find a picture there for them. They're asking me to recover a picture for them, not rummage through their data. So,
on bad hard drives where I was able to recover the data, not deleted data, but recover the data. Sometimes they'll have pictures in, root C anywhere, not just their, my pictures on the documents.
Right.
And I would collect it all, put it together, and let them decide.
And as a tech, when you're doing this kind of stuff, when you're either moving data or you're recovering data, you will come across people's personal data. People ask me, I'll follow up with a client and I'll ask them for their password again to do something. And they say, but I gave it to you, a couple days ago. I don't remember it. I actively forget passwords. So the same thing, you need to actively forget those. You need to actively, you may come across it and you will come across something, but that is where your ethics come in and you have to take the high ground to do that. I do not know the laws, for if you find something that is illegal, what the steps are to do that. I don't know. I don't know whether or not you want to open that door or not to go down that road. That would be a very, very tough decision. And I don't even know if that's a state-to-state law because all three of us are in different states.
Correct.
Or if that is a... but then there's the federal law that goes over all of that. I have no idea. And that may be something that we can bring up in another show.
I am in the same state as Tim.
Okay. Well, the two of us are. Sorry. I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's okay.
Wait. Are you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it's a big sorry. State. It is a big state. I apologize. I've only been there once. So as far as I know, you guys could be next door neighbors and be lying to me.
I was only in Ohio once.
But so I mean I do have I do know people who are in law enforcement that deal with data recovery, and I can ask them. I can bring that up and say maybe that'll be a topic we can bring up on another show, and I'll research that.
You know who would be good to ask, and there's a new Dor just posted the show with Scott. My hard drive died. He just posted one a couple days ago.
Scott Moulton.
Yeah, I listened to him so far. He definitely would know.
Okay, maybe I'll reach out to him and ask and see what he has found. So that's a great topic. I'm gonna do some research and I'll come back and find out what is the law as far as when you're recovering data and you do come across something that may be, say, federally illegal. What is our responsibilities as tech for reporting things like that? I've worked in school districts before where we had to, our job was to recover data off of a hard drive and then we found stuff from a teacher, that's a different story. You're working in an educational facility on an educational computer that's a teacher. That's completely different than something else. But I've been in that situation where you've had to bring in law enforcement officials because certain things have been found on a computer or suspected stuff has been found on a computer and then, you know, recovering that data. But the data recovery that we're talking about, just pulling hard drives and pulling that data, there are certain steps and there are certain rules and regulations and procedures that need to be followed when you are looking, when there people are actively searching for data as to not interfere with timestamps and stuff like that. So when we come across it, it's a little bit different than when you are suspected somebody of doing something and you're pulling data from them. That definitely goes to, you know, and most states have that where, I mean, even in downtown Portland, Oregon here, we have, there's an FBI computer forensics lab.
If I heard you correctly, you were just differentiating the difference between forensic data recovery.
Yes.
And just data recovery, like what you and I, what we've all been talking about the last so long.
Right.
Yeah, it's like the difference between I just want grandpa's pictures back, as opposed to, hey, we're recovering data to convict someone of a crime, and so it has to stand up to the law and such and that.
Right. But the question is the reason I brought it up is because if for some reason we are trying to recover grandpa's pictures and we come across something else, then we have to give it over to. We possibly need to hand it over to law enforcement, and then they will end up doing right. And then that's when you give it to them, and then it becomes forensics on their part. But what's the rules and the laws for us as technicians? When do we have to do that? And so that's what I'm going to find out.
Yeah, that would be great. Having said that, though, if I come across something that's not necessarily illegal, but I don't like it or I wouldn't want to see it again, I will tell that customer that this is not so good, and please don't. I don't want to work on a machine to find and see something like this again. Without going into kind of details, I don't know exactly what that would look like. Maybe something that would be violent or sexual, but not necessarily illegal. Look, I have to be comfortable where I work. I have to, if they're wallpaper, for crying out loud, something inappropriate, but not necessarily illegal, I'll change it as long as I'm working on it. I'll give it back to them and just say that crosses a line that I have. Standards, and I'd appreciate if they brought me anything. I wouldn't want to deal with that sort of thing again. And people are respectful of that,
right? Right. And well, you have to be. I mean, as long as you're respectful back to them, I think they will be respectful to you. You know.
Yeah. Don't stick your finger in their chest and really give it to them.
Right, because that's
right.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, and I have not
really
come
give it to them.
I have not come across that, so.
People have stuff on their computers, but usually, unless you go digging for it, you're really not going to find it. It's rare that the wallpaper is just this constant rotation of inappropriate stuff. People do tend to stay in a folder somewhere else, but it rarely is in your face. However, there is stuff on there. I don't know how many times this one guy I've cleaned his computer a million times, infected. It's always from some download, and the file name is always, it always has like either the words pantyhose in it, or like, well, I don't want to go any further than that, but it's always there's like 10 terms, and like pick three, right? I mean, it's like a Mad Libs of like really weird, creepy stuff, and the download file is always like three of those words put together, sort of dashes, and I'm basically, I'll work on this machine remotely, but he's never ever to bring it to me physically because I'm not touching it.
Yeah.
Right, Mitch?
Yes, sir.
We're not touching it. Anyway, let's move on.
I know. I was thinking the same thing.
It's a gross topic. It's only getting worse.
It is, but really, it's something, especially new technicians, they really need to be aware of. Right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, yeah, make yourself aware of it or you will become aware of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Mitch, you were going to ask, you had preemptively asked me a question on earlier today about a topic that I think we don't have. I don't think we should go into a huge long detail about this. We're kind of coming up across it on an hour here, but it is a topic that I think maybe we can talk a little bit about, think about it, and then come back next week with a little more discussion on it. And this is going to be great because I would really like to hear from listeners and from feedback on this topic as to hear what other people have to say about it.
Open source. Is it good? Is it bad? And if you Google that, I mean, just like that, you'll get just as many pros and cons. And I see their points on both. I mean, my son was telling me why, you know, an enterprise would not use open source, and he makes all good valid points. But then you'll see where some big enterprise company like Intel, they're backing up this open source project, you know, with millions of dollars, and you know, it's just it's confusing to me. But I can see where some open source people are stealing open source and good software, and they're closing it themselves and they're profiting off of it, stealing it. And it's got pros and cons. But then that's not to say, like Martin and Tim, maybe you know this stuff more about reverse engineering, how they can, you know, how does Windows get infected? Because some smart hacker is doing something, they can implement whatever, reverse the engineer, they can hack the code, whatever. I mean, tell me, am I wrong? Isn't that how a lot of things get hacked or Microsoft gets infected?
You know, well, I know about that, Phil Thimble, but reverse engineering, or if they just
like it's closed source, exploit. But can't these hackers, these people that can program, they can figure out, you know, how to break into get the source code, and if they want to, you know, it may take a long time, or how does that stuff work? I don't know if somebody could educate me on it. Anybody?
Well, Martin, I mean, I guess I've never really thought about it very much as far as, I mean, to me, I've always imagined that the issues with Windows and infections and whatnot, it's just where they've stumbled across exploits that they've then exploited to overtake Windows. As far as actually, you know, reverse engineering to the point where they have essentially, you know, cracked it open and are going through lines of code. I don't know if that's exactly what they're doing.
I don't know either,
so much,
but it's a good question.
Or I don't know. I think that actually most like infections and whatnot seem to me like it's all based on two or three maybe bits of software. Clever geeks have figured out along the way, but then you know some bad guys along have kind of piggybacked it, and that's where you kind of see like a lot of the same stuff over and over again. A lot of these infections and stuff, I know for years we've been seeing stuff that you think these people just aren't very clever, and it's hard to imagine that they're the ones actually doing
it. And the second Tuesday of every month, isn't, you know, they come out with the updates, isn't that mostly security updates? Martin?
Absolutely. I would imagine so.
And that's closed source, you know what I mean? And
So a couple things here. You can have this is why I always said that if people are listening to please and you have a thought about this, please let us know, because this is a huge, huge topic. You can do things. Well, let's take Google, for example. Google now has a kind of a bounty program where if you find a loophole in some of their products, they will actually pay you for it, because there's two ways to do this. There's, you know, I found a loophole and I'm going to sell it to somebody so then they can make malicious software and they can exploit that. Or there is, hey, I found a loophole and I'm going to go to the product themselves and I'm going to say, this is what the problem is. Now, the problem with that is that's kind of like self-incriminating, because if you say, I found it, they're going to say, well, now you've been looking for it and stuff like that. So it's tough, because you could either sell it and then it can be used to exploit a product, or you can try to give it back, like I said, and then they may or may not fix it, or you just tell the world and then all of a sudden now everybody knows.
See, the question is, what are they doing to find the loophole?
And, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I am not a programmer. I cannot reverse engineer. I get lost trying to leave my house sometimes. Luckily my wife leaves me breadcrumbs, and so that's why if I would stop leaving, I would lose weight. But
that's strange.
That's a weird way to look at it, huh?
That is all right.
Whereas open source software, if it's truly, so you mentioned something else, Mitch. You said open source becoming closed source software, depending on the policy, depending on the license of that structure, whether or not they can do it. Open source software and some of the licensing says that, Mitch, you can make a product, you release it, it's open source. I can take that product, I can then tweak it, add my name to it, make it jingle, and then turn around and sell it again with my information on it. And that's perfectly legal. I don't know what the licensing structure, and I guess it would depend on the product, whether or not I can turn around and closed source it. The problem with closed sourcing something, in my opinion, is that I know what goes on. Only I know what goes on. Okay? If I was to get hit by a bus and the product fails, it's because only I know what goes on. Whereas open source, if we all know what goes on, then we all can make it better. Because, you know, when you run into a problem as a tech and you just bang your head against the wall and you have no idea what the problem is, and then all of a sudden you just give up and you ask another tech and the tech goes, oh, yeah, here it is. And you're like, oh, why didn't I see that? I kind of feel that with open source. Somebody makes a product and they everybody gets together and says, you know, if we did this, we could make this better. If we did this, we could make this better. And, oh, here's a patch right here and we should make this, you know, we should close this up. That's a great thing. And so... there are benefits of there are pros and cons of both open software and closed software. This is a topic that really cannot be answered in a 20-minute conversation.
It would be good to have like a whole show about that and somebody that knows about program, how all this stuff is implemented, because it is interesting. You don't hear a lot about this. I mean, it's not like you're going to have. What are some of these big hacker groups? Is DEF CON one of them, or is that's a convention? No. I think.
Well, yeah, but it's a you know big one. It is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you had somebody DEF CON anonymous, and Black Hat and, yeah, just to talk back, because it's really interesting.
It is, and a lot of those people are programmers and or. They're you know what? They are smarter than me. No matter how you look at it, they are definitely smarter than me.
Well, program. If you can program, I don't care what it is. You're the bomb, in my opinion.
I run Linux. I also, you know, but I support Windows systems. So my system here in front of me has open source stuff. I use programs like LastPass for my password. It's an open source application. I use something like ProXPN for my VPN system. That is both open source and closed source. BitTorrent Sync. We've talked a lot about that. That's kind of a mixture. But then Windows makes some really good stuff. Active Directory, for example. Active Directory is a very good enterprise level application. Completely closed source. There are some open source type, you know, ish stuff out there on the market, but it's not as good. So, you know, it's not. I would be surprised if somebody said they lived completely in an open source world. I'm not saying there aren't people who. I don't want to say that there aren't people who don't do that. I know there are people who are, and I don't want to offend them because that is very bold and that is very brave, and kudos to them for doing that. I think that is great. It's not something that I can do because I have to support. You know, my wife's Windows box and my wife's and son's, my daughter's iPhones and the server downstairs. You know, I have a Linux box, but yet I have a server backend that's Windows. So I live in a mixture of them. And
why isn't that the right answer? I mean, nothing in this world's black and white.
No.
You know, there's a million examples of how one is appropriate and the other isn't, and vice versa. Never is everything right for everybody. I don't understand why this has to become a debate any more than just a discussion. I think open source is fantastic. I love the fact that if I knew anything about it or even how to, I could crack it open and go through it and say, aha, that's where they're trying to screw me right there. But at the same time, I don't think that, unless I really kind of misunderstand this, I don't see why.
You have these fanboys out there both ways that like it or hate it, but they just like knocking. Just for whatever reason, they just want to knock the other.
I mean, that's fine. Everybody would rather push their closed source software than drive their open source. But I guess that's kind of my two cents. I don't see why there aren't certain examples or certain scenarios where closed source software is really the best choice, and other examples where open source is the best choice, and then everything else we can just kind of discuss and maybe make a decision.
See, I'm in the corner. My philosophy is, can't we all just get along? You know what I mean?
No, I want to decide ahead of time what we agree on, then we'll just fight to the death over the rest of it.
That's what it seems
like. I don't want
to
get along. That's it.
I mean, a lot of people make fun of these Linux conventions and we go to or whatever, and I don't like either way.
They're not making fun of the convention per se. They're making fun of the people, and that's.
Making fun of me, I can understand.
That one before I said it. When I was there, I actually pointed at myself and laughed at myself.
I do that. I don't have to be at a convention. I do that already. Look at this haircut.
I tell you what, getting from where you live to Columbus, that's a lot of breadcrumbs.
Oh man, I think I gained. Yeah. That is a lot of breadcrumbs.
Oh, Martin, you're one of the thinnest ones there. You and Tim.
Yeah, but so think about that, guys. It doesn't. Like you said, Tim, there's never gonna be a right answer. What works great in open source may just tank in closed source, and what works great in closed source may just tank in open source. It's the world we live in. There are smart people out there who make money, and they closed source their software, and it's very good. And there are people out there who make money but yet they feel like they want to open their software, and they pass it on freely to somebody else, and that person can make money, and that software is just as good. It comes down to personal preference, and it comes down to what task do you want to accomplish. What's your comfort? What is your comfort level? Do you feel comfortable, like, say, LastPass? For example, would you rather have your passwords being kept by a company that says this is how we salt and hash it, this is how we store it, this is what we do with your data, this is not what we do with your data, or would you rather have a company that says just trust us? I made my decision, but I can't make your decision, and that's where you will have to make your decision on what you want to run. Right. I don't think any of us here on the show can make a decision for somebody else. It all really comes down to a personal feeling about how they feel about it. There are, and like you said, Mitch, there are fanboys on both sides. And I worked in an environment where we had Windows fanboys and we had Linux fanboys, and they would get into heated discussions in cube farms about what was right and what was wrong. And at the end of the day, nothing changed. And you know what it meant?
It was.
And
if that ever, dear listener, if that ever happens to you, please put down whatever you're holding, walk away, and don't ever go back to that place.
Exactly.
Because you're being uncool.
Well, yeah. Because what happens is you got the Windows people screaming that Windows is really good, and you got the Linux people screaming that no, Linux is good because look at what it can do. And it was a never-ending argument that never ended, and all it was a tally. Oh, one for Linux, one for Windows, one for Linux, one for Windows. Oh, two for Linux, one for Windows. And at the end of the day, you'd count up and you'd go, guess what? It's 10 to 10. And the next day would start over, and oh, it's 10 to 10. And or maybe one would be one day because we're doing one project, and the other would be another day because we're doing another project. After so many years, you kind of go, it doesn't matter.
After years.
Well, it wasn't really years, but
after days, I would just like beat myself to death with my stapler. Let me ask you the whole discussion. Like, what's a good example of a place where closed source software is appropriate? I'm thinking security. I mean, am I pretty much on track? Like, missile defense systems. I mean, am I on track? That's a good scenario of using closed source software where the people that write it know what's going on, the people running it know what's going on, and that's good enough for the world. Am I right in saying that?
Well, I don't suppose you'd really want to release, you don't want your missile command software on GitHub, you know, where anybody can take it and stuff like that. But so sure, why not? Another place would be, Active Directory. I think Active Directory is very well done in it, but it's closed source. You know?
Okay, so that's an example of closed source, a good example of closed source software in a retail environment. You can buy it where that's a product that the company I'm not saying Microsoft, but I'm saying any company making a retail product worth paying for, the people are willing to pay for, a lot of money's going into developing it, that, move, not think about software, but just our free market system, that people should be willing to buy things they're willing to pay for, and some companies should be rewarded for the time they spent making it.
Yes. But now, you do have to remember that open source software does not always mean free. So you can get free open source software, and a lot of times when you think of open source software, you think of completely free. But there are people out there who make open source software and sell it. That's how we make money. I mean, I make a product, I have it, and I sell it to you, and that's how I get a job. So then, and that's how I can feed my family. Now, you bought it. You can do whatever you want with it. So open source does not necessarily mean free.
It's a good example of a piece of open source software that's for sale.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Honestly, chat room, if you got anything, because I can't think of anything off the top of my head. We'll come up with something. But, I wish I had something. I wish I had something right off the top of my head.
I also drew a blank, something that I would pay for, but that you could then take and do with as you please.
ICQ.
Well, but see something. Okay, so take. I mentioned LastPass. LastPass. I don't know if that is totally open source, because then where do you draw the line? What is open source? Is open source completely? I guess the term open source would mean that it is completely open source. Like you said, you can completely get into it. Where something like LastPass is not necessarily open source, but yet the company has released what they will do with it. The company is very open about how they protect your data. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank here. This is a topic that, it was one of those topics where you're going to lay in bed at night and go, oh, wait, I got an idea.
Thought-provoking, for sure.
Very, very thought-provoking, and not something that's going to be covered in 20, 30 minutes. So.
Well, yeah, gee, I hope my wife isn't a Windows fan. I mean, we'll be just fighting all night.
Fist throwing.
Yeah, 8 o'clock in the morning, it's 1 to 1, and we have to start over again next night. Speaking of my wife, actually, I went through, this is a funny story, I went through this like long explanation of what Linux Fest was and Linux and all this, and she kind of hung on a lot further through the story than I would have expected her. She just started nodding off. And I got to the end, and she said, I just got one question. And I thought, wow, one question. She said, why do they call it open sores?
You could say because we walk so much.
It just kind of cracked me up. Explained something. Never even heard the phrase open source. That no wonder she like hung on and looked quizzical at me. The whole thing. She was just trying to pick that open source thing up. So anyway, it's not open source.
Yeah, I will tell my wife. I'll come back from something and I'll tell her all about it. And she, bless her soul, will sit there and look at me and listen and listen and listen and just nod her head. And I think after a while I go, I'm really boring you, aren't I? And she goes, well, but I love you and I want to listen to what you have to say. Aww. Which I love. And I think that's very sweet of her. But I just stop. Exactly. You say that, but you're walking away from me, and I keep, why? No. She's, She's very sweet. And
you see her get the breadcrumbs out.
I know, exactly. Oh, are we going somewhere? I get all excited.
But no, you are.
Yeah, exactly. She just takes a handful and throws them in the yard, and I'm like, oh, man. She comes back in and says, well, that'll keep Dad busy for an hour and a half.
Oh, just sends the Roomba out dropping breadcrumbs behind it.
Very awesome. Well, yeah. Oh, I got a headache now. Gosh, Mitch brings the headache medicine.
It was a good show, though. I thought.
Oh, it was an awesome show. We covered a lot of topics, and I hope somebody will respond back because I want to hear some thoughts and some stuff, and I'm going to come back with some data myself.
I do have a question. Well, we had a question in chat. Adam wants to know if they're still selling the pilot's gear, like the hats and the shirts. I will let I'll ask Dor, and we'll get back to you on that. But if I forget, you can ask him too.
Martin. I don't have the answer to that one.
I mean, I got the website up and I pasted it, but I don't know if it's still good. So I'll have to ask Dor. He'll know.
Yeah, I don't have a hat myself, so that's why it's all white. I need a hat.
You're not wearing one of the clear ones.
Oh, it's yes, my clear hat. I should just get clear. I should get a clear visor and wear it.
You know, I noticed.
Actually, I think they're still selling the clear ones. They're like $20.
I don't think Dor wore his hat the whole time there. He had it in the car, but I don't think he wore it. He wore a hat, but he didn't wear the pilot's hat.
He wore his Seahawks hat.
Seahawks. Which are doing very good, by the way.
See what?
I think they're 3-0.
Is that a minor leagues hockey team?
No, it means they have 3 wins. Seattle Seahawks. They got 3 wins.
Oh, Seattle. It must be a croquet team.
Russell Wilson. Nah, they're doing quite well.
How come there aren't any professional croquet leagues out there? Like,
because they would be doing that, snoring.
They have a cable channel somewhere.
On the Ocho. On the Ocho.
Oh,
<geez. laughs> All right. So, and with that, Tim, if you want to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Yeah, buddy. I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+. I'm in like Tim in the Podnuts forums. You can email me, tim@realpcrepair.com.
Excellent. Mitch, if people want to get a hold of you.
You can email me. I'll give you my email address, which is use the Podnuts one.
Geeksters@podnuts.com.
There you go.
I love how every week Mitch has his sides halfway through.
Yeah, I was going to give my.
I'm not going to give my personal. I'm not giving
my personal one. I use for everything. It gets hammered. It gets hammered for. It does pretty good for spyware. Catches a lot of it.
There you go. Well, yes, you can reach all of us if you want to send us a voicemail or an email, geeksters@podnuts.com or 7076podnut. We're here we're live every Tuesday, 3:30 Pacific for people on the West Coast, 6:30 Eastern for people on the East Coast. If you're in the middle, I don't know. Sorry, you're going to have to do some math yourself.
Do some math, yeah.
Podnuts.com/geeksters is where you can find us.
Show up 3:30 and wait.
I've been waiting 3 hours, so that's because you're in Florida. So Mitch did bring up some gear. There is also an affiliate link, amazon.com/podnuts. Tim, killing me, man.
I'm sorry, man.
That's all right. Amazon.
I told you, I've been sick for a week. Today's the first day I felt good.
It's good to hear you. It is good to have you back.
That's all right.
Amazon.com/podnuts. You can go and affiliate link for Amazon. I give a little money back to the Podnuts community. My name is Martin Obando. You can find me at obandocomputing.com or martin@obandocomputing.com. I've actually had a listener contact me. I just wanted to say hi to him. I forget his name. Darn it. I had it pulled up. I apologize for that, listener. He also went from an iPhone to a Galaxy S4, and we've been chatting back and forth about our woes and some the pros and cons of each one of those. You know, again, Tuesdays, 6:30 Eastern, if you'd like to hear us live, and we're in the IRC chat room, the free node, and #podnuts is our channel. So until next week, guys, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email or voicemail if you got questions regarding or just topics regarding open source, regarding what should a tech do if they come across some illegal folders or files on a computer. I'm going to do some research, and we're going to get back to you guys next week. So thanks for hanging out with us today, and we will see you guys later.